Hi, welcome everybody to the first session of the afternoon. Our presenter today will be Michael Meeks. He works at SUSE, and right now he's working on LibreOffice. Okay, thanks, Michael.
Thank you very much. Excellent to see you all here. Hope you enjoyed your lunch. Plenty of time for it to digest whilst we look at online and, mobile versions. So it helps me to make the talk more interesting to you if I know something about you. So, this is the interactive bit. Which of you would call yourself a programmer? I'm a programmer. You don't have to, but okay. Do you hack code? Okay. Which of you would call yourself a system administrator come tech worker thing? Okay. And the rest of you users, would you call yourself users? Or inactive? Okay, perfect. Excellent. That helps. Just balance where we're going. Perfect. So, yeah. That's the overview. It's not very interesting. So, LibreOffice faces lots of challenges in today's world. What is the future going to look like? Who knows? Who knows? One of the futures that we can see in our world is this, the only choice. I always like that kind of choice where there's just one. Incidentally, do interrupt me, you know, heckle, argue if you want, ask questions. Yeah, no chief executive. That's great, isn't it? Yeah. No headquarters, no IT infrastructure, no company at all. You know, they'll just money will appear, you know. It's going to be amazing. This is the cloud future. There's another kind of future which everyone else is convinced is going to occur, which is the app store future, you know, where apps, which is short for application, but anyway, are everything. Are they the future of desktop, you know? 300,000 iPhone and iPad apps. That's just the number of them. And 10 billion downloads. That's quite a lot, isn't it? Yeah. Just to give some perspective, Mozilla has about 1 million downloads a day. So that's 300 million a year. So they're doing pretty good with 10 billion. VLC, one of the most downloaded projects, gets like 4.5 million a week. So, yeah, this is some pretty... Obviously, this is the future as well, right? But unfortunately, it's totally different. So, what about mixing these two together, the synergy of buzzwords? Not only a cloud-enabled web app, but also an app, you know, so you can have an app store for cloud-enabled web apps, right? The best of everything. You can install your everything written in JavaScript, you know, brilliant. So, of course, the web does some good things. SaaS solves your deployment problems really nicely, and we see companies that suffer because they have one or two Microsoft documents left that they have used for decades. You know, the human resources, personnel, satisfaction, and empowerment program is really a VBA macro, you know, in a Word document. And you type your things in. And it seems a shame to buy Microsoft Office for every employee only to work out that they are unhappy because they are running Windows or whatever. So there are some things we can do here, moving these applications into a central place in your enterprise to run them through the browser. So that's kind of useful. But the problem is, if you look at the current clutch of web applications doing Office stuff, they solve the deployment problem really well. So you go to the URL in your browser, and there it is. Brilliant. No deployment problem. Often you have to download really a lot of JavaScript first, but, you know, it's broadly solved. And they add these cool collaborative features, which are good. And, hey, I'm doing a talk on collaboration later, so maybe if you're here at 5 and still awake, you can come and see that. But there are kind of minor regressions that go along with this. So a long time back in the day, Xerox invented WYSIWYG. Right, wasn't it great, you know? And eventually, the PC caught it. You know, if you remember Microsoft Word 5, you know, typing in the text and putting these attributes and then printing it out to see what it's going to look like. It's good for trees, that. But anyway, WYSIWYG editing revolutionized the world with Windows 3.0. And it's disappeared again, unfortunately. Modern cloud applications don't give you WYSIWYG editing. I don't know if you noticed that, but try inserting a footnote. Try printing anything from your browser. Pagination is optional. And, things like offline access. You know, ever since the first laptops, you know, were luggable like this, you know, and if you load it and open it in your aeroplane and type on it, and the guy leans the seat back in front of you. You know, you can still see the victims with no hands, you know, from those days. You know, they were the enthusiasts that made today's world possible. But offline access is gone as well, you know, so bad luck. Your laptop is so useless on the aeroplane. Anyhow, app stores are also wildly popular. Everyone is doing them, you know, Apple, Intel, Amazon, Microsoft, and so on. Yeah, 5 million downloads a day. It's pretty good. We should do that on Linux, right? We should have some kind of like granular package management system where you can, you know, choose what you want, so you can install like arbitrary things. It's the killer feature. You know, it'll make Linux. Wait a minute. Anyhow, Linux on the desktop. So we've seen them meshed together with these ridiculous web app stores. I'm installing my web app, etc. There you go. Anyhow, so everyone is looking for the magic bullet, right? And the problem is magic bullets are in short supply. But here's one that is often touted. You can get a tenfold, at least tenfold, productivity improvement by choosing any one of these languages. You know, like Lisp, Smalltalk, Haskell, Java, C#, you know, whatever. It's 10 times better than anything else, right? And it's going to be so simple programming that anyone can do it. Anyone. All of you guys who didn't put your hands up saying you're a programmer will immediately wake up tomorrow with a copy of any one of this quite long list of languages and find yourself programming. And if you believe that, come and see me afterwards. I have some exciting financial opportunities you can take part in. So actually, there is a silver bullet, and Fred Brooks discovered this years ago in his great book, The Mythical Man Month, which you'll love if you read. And code reuse is it. The best line of code is one that someone didn't have to write, you know, because they reused it. And free software does this really well. I'm a recovering sufferer from a component-based technology. I don't know if you've ever looked at components technology, but the idea is, you know, you have COM as a component technology, or DCOM. And so you have these boxes, and you put interfaces around them, you know, CORBA interfaces. And so you don't need to see what's in the box. You just use the interface. It's beautiful, right? Lovely. You could even have, like, meta markets with app stores with components in them that are arbitrarily plugged together. And it was a nice idea. But unfortunately, it never really worked. It turns out that what's inside the box is so broken, usually, that you can't really use it without seeing inside the box. And when you look in, you're like, why did I buy that? You know, that's ridiculous. Luckily, free software doesn't have this problem. They just give the software out to everyone, and you adapt it to your needs, and there's no need for component technology at all. So we have a huge advantage there that is not really shared by the rest of the world. So we get a lot of stuff right, but, you know, everyone likes to rewrite stuff. You know, whether it's beautiful grammar checkers converted to other languages, or whether it's, you know, whatever it is, there's always some excuse for rewriting and not reusing, which is a shame. And it's boring, you know, it takes time. So why don't we rewrite everything? Let's rewrite everything in JavaScript, you know? It's the new language, it's 10 times more productive than anything else. And, so here's some reasons why you shouldn't rewrite your Office suite. So MicroPro, you've heard of MicroPro, of course. They are the world's number one software company in America. Their Office suite is the number one Office suite. It's absolutely dominant in the 1980s. And they totally killed their company primarily by rewriting their Office suite. Of course, the rewrite was never quite as good as the previous one. So they had two, and the teams fought each other to the death, accidentally destroying the company in the process. It was a triumph of... triumph, really. What about Corel? Corel rewrote their Office suite in Java. I don't know if you remember that. That was a brilliant technology demonstration in 97. There was no cooler thing to do than to load Corel Office inside, you know, was it Netscape, you know, at the time, on Windows, and see this beautiful... But they never shipped a final version, totally squandered their cash position, destroyed themselves in a quite effective way, I think. Microsoft tried to rewrite Microsoft Office. As everyone knows, Microsoft Office is terrible inside. They had this project. It was the second attempt, the Pyramid Project, to develop a common code base of Word. The first Pyramid had been an attempt to completely rewrite the existing product. It was abandoned when it was determined it would take the development team too long to rewrite and then catch up with all the new capabilities that have been added on the other side, right? It just couldn't be done. So luckily, they smelt the coffee and they canned the project. So it's not a terribly new idea, this. This is a helpful quote, I think, that it's worth not fighting yourself, I think. So we have a different approach. The rewrite in JavaScript approach sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? That whole Java thing. I mean, JavaScript is nothing like Java. But, you know, yeah, 10 million lines. So we could rewrite LibreOffice so that it would run anywhere. You know, we could rewrite it in JavaScript. So it would run offline on your mobile phone, right? Consider that the performance of LibreOffice is improving massively, but it's still not completely there, I would argue. And that rewriting it in 10 million lines of JavaScript, which have to be jitted to native code and then run on your ARM device, is not a performance, you know, a recipe for success in performance, let's say. But hey, maybe you disagree. So go for it, but please do it somewhere else. And ultimately, telephone companies don't really believe in this model either. It's interesting. It's interesting when you look at the cloud how few people actually put data in it. You know, so the big cloud people are selling the biggest mobile phones. You know, your phone now is a supercomputer of the, you know, the 20s, isn't it? Let's face it. You know, it's just incredibly fast and big. And where does your address book live? Well, does it live, you know, in this very expensive device you have in your hand, or does it live in the cheap cloud somewhere else? Well, of course, it doesn't live in the cheap cloud somewhere else. It lives on your device, doesn't it? You know, everyone knows that. They tried doing it the other way, but signals were so bad, and so many people leant out of the window to get a signal and were killed, you know, that they decided that, you know, fat clients would be kind of useful. Your phone should be a thick device with all of this CPU power in it. So, you know, these devices are becoming very fat, and your phone has more transistors than you, you know. The world is interesting. It's an interesting place. We have these fast computers. So let's talk about the cloud thing. So often when we come to looking at web applications and web office suites, the first thing that happens is throwing all the features away. You know, we add the killer feature of cloudness, and perhaps we add some collaboration, but the rest is optional. It's an optional extra. And, I mean, you know, it can be very successful. Collaboration is really, really a useful feature. So the wiki is awesome, right? Everyone knows wikis are awesome. Even I know this. But, you did throw away quite a lot of useful things with the wiki markup, didn't you? So, but still it works. And so I think I would argue that the deployment and collaboration features are really what make web applications more than a joke. Anyhow, here we go. So, interestingly, our web UI reuses virtually all of the code. It means it has a significant server side, but it's actually a superset of all of these other applications, which is interesting. The green box is the traditional user interface there. At this point, people say, you're crazy. It's not possible. How can you have the same code running on your phone and also in your, you know, data center? Well, of course, the Linux kernel is doing exactly that. You know, your Android phone is running your Linux kernel, and your supercomputer is running your Linux kernel, and they're very, very similar code-wise. You know, there's a huge commonality there. Okay, there's a lot of device drivers in the tree, but when you come down to the core of it, basically the same thing. So the good things about sharing common code base is when you do a rendering fix, when you do a performance work, when you, you know, do any kind of feature work, it's shared everywhere. So, for example, you know, we do a profiling on this small device and we discover that, you know, 15% of the CPU time on startup is parsing configuration. And a great chunk of that, it's more like 30%, is not actually at all useful. So, you know, you remove that and suddenly everybody starts 10% faster, right? Or, you know, 5% faster, whatever. Which is useful to have for everyone, right? You didn't waste your time just on that little device. And similarly, you can get big teams, you know, actually productive instead of working on these small things. The other thing is that actually when you look at Ultrabooks and some of these clamshells, you know, they have touch screens just like we do, you know, in these mobile devices. So the difference between an Intel Ultrabook and a tablet, Android tablet, hardware-wise, particularly when the Android tablet is one that attaches to a keyboard, is nil. It's the same thing, right? You know, there's some detail differences, but, you know, you see them in a shop next to each other, and, you know, one just happens to be a lot faster and more usable, but they're basically the same thing. So we have to do a lot of this work anyway to stay relevant in those spaces. So, yeah, Android is really fun to develop for. I don't know if anyone's developed for Android here, but to me, it's amazing that the thing works when you use it. I mean, it works really well. But when you look under the bonnet, yeah, Anyhow, so one of the things we're doing is trying to merge a whole lot of code together so that there is less linking time and better cold start. So one of the advantages from the mobile work is a smaller LibreOffice that's faster to load for everyone, which is good. And using link time optimization to improve that. So getting the computer to really think as it links and rip out bits of code that aren't used. So it can do that automatically if you get enough into one lump. So I think we now have the world's biggest shared library. Well, probably not. But for real code, it's only like 40 megabytes or something like that of raw code without debug symbols. And yeah, it's a great test case for link time optimization if you care about that. So yeah. Yeah, and some of this stuff overlaps with the web office pieces too. So the same code we need to make the online thing work is shared by Android, actually, which is perhaps slightly counterintuitive. Anyhow, so here we go. First look at the cloud office. The HTML5 canvas we're using, HTML5 is great, primarily because it provides a real rendering model at last, you know, so that you can actually draw things and be sure. You've seen the CSS is awesome mug, have you? Yeah, very famous. If you haven't, Google for CSS is awesome. But HTML5 fixes this with the canvas, and you can actually really render and know what you'll see, which is good. WebSockets is also really important. So as we touch a key, it gets sent down a socket, a WebSocket, to the other end, which then renders it and it comes back. Now, in previous years, you know, the web was you would have had to open a connection to a remote server, do your authentication handshake, send this blinking thing, and then get something back, which is high latency. Whereas a WebSocket is kind of beautiful. You can lay your own protocol over it very nicely. And we use compressed pings for screen updating. So what comes back is remarkably small. Let me try and look at my end slide here. Yeah, so the bandwidth is relatively low for simple tasks. So as you type a character, interestingly, LibreOffice re-renders quite a large area for various reasons to do with complex text. So even though if you're just typing English, you type another character and it's not going to affect any of this stuff. If you're typing in Thai or Northern Thai or, you know, whatever, quite a lot of this can be relevant. So it will re-render a fair chunk. So you type one character and it re-renders, boom, like this. But in fact, it does a diff, so that all it really changes is this, and it then ping compresses that, and then pushes it over the wire, so the actual amount of data is really relatively small. And we use copy area for scrolling, we optimize that, so that happens on the client, which is kind of nice. So we use GTK3 to do this, which has a Broadway backend that works pretty nicely, and it has this very small chunk of JavaScript in the client, less than 3,000 lines of code, something like that. It's still really a prototype. You can't rush out and buy this. No one will sell it to you yet for a reasonable price. But we're very interested in sharing that. And so, yeah, you get all of these features. There are a number of challenges. Of course, printing is still a disaster area on the web. So, you know, the browser doesn't print its own HTML pages very well. It's riddled with bugs. You print your Google map, and it clearly, you know, it's like a rectangle or a square shoved up in the top left corner, right? You know, there's all this page that you wasted, because the APIs really aren't there to discover these things properly and to produce good printed layout. So that's hard, particularly hard for us. Anyhow, let me show you some demos. Let's see if the demos are going to play ball. So, not online. That's good. Who needs to be online? So this is LibreOffice inside the browser. And, you can type like you do in an office suite. Does anyone know about this sort of stuff, that when you do stars, you get autocorrection? Yeah, good. Someone nods happily. So, you know, awesome. You know, it's bold. Good. What else can you do? Well, so, of course, recently Cedric Bostanar, in his infinite wisdom, has added these nice features. It turns out that people couldn't work out how to insert headers and footers. So, if you want a page number, it turns out what you want to do is you want to put a header in, and then you want to go insert and field and page number, and then you get a field, and then there it is. And you've got these tabs that sort of type backwards thing. So that's kind of nice. And of course, all of that, pretty easy to use UI stuff was originally implemented not for a cloud office or for a phone or whatever, but for your fat client to make it easier. It just is reused and it just works. And of course, that makes people excessively happy. So we have to, look happy. That's very important. So all of that's there. But more than that, if you consider some of the really fun stuff, that we can do. So, for example, there is a very strangely named sheet here, the Boolean sheet. This is a Visio file. It's got all sorts of important strategic management sort of diagramming in it, you know, with, let me see if I can zoom in a bit. Oh, this is incidentally, you see a re-rendering bug there. That's always good. So another thing you see at the bottom is the new artwork that's been done to make the zooming nicer and crisper and the outlines prettier. Yeah, leadership integrated with, I don't know, it's all meaningless. So that's fun. So we got, you know, that feature depth, but we can also do even more fun things. So if you consider the difficulty of, for example, not just loading the Microsoft file format documents and shoving them somehow into a DOM and then somehow rendering them, but if you consider little problems like VBA macros, you'd have to implement the basic language and the object model in the browser in JavaScript. You know, this is kind of a big problem. You know, it's not one of those small, let me go away and do a quick hack. So, you know, but importantly, you can do your puzzle, you know, in your VBA if you're competent, which I'm not. So how's this going to work? Is that... Woohoo! Cool. So, and all of that's just working, right, in the browser. And, you know, just in case you're missing the fact, you know, I try and drag this out of the browser and, you know, it's really in there. You know, it can be in the next room, which is kind of neat. At least I like it. You can do your presentations as well, I guess, and it'll, you know, full screen to some extent at the browser. And, yeah, it's just there. Relatively easy, and it seems to work reasonably well. Oh, that header demo I showed you is just, it seems so simple, right? Let me get shut of this nonsense if I can. Go away. Yeah, 13 moves. Oh, I see, there's a modal dialog underneath, which is why it won't close. Yeah, the window stacking is not what it could be, as you can see. But, you know, just this header thing here is something that can't be done in any existing online office suite that doesn't use a fat rendering, right? So I think the Flash guys have a buzzword or something like that, which is using a similar, you know, it's basically an application shoved into your client. But for everyone else, you know, doing a heading and knowing which page it's going to be on or a footnote and then doing the re-layout of the text for the footnote is just doesn't work. Let me show you another example of that. I think this crashes due to some random Java problem in master. But, you know, things like this, doing, you know, sort of custom contours around images. I don't know if you've ever noticed this feature. It's really hard to find. But if you go here, you can edit the contour, and you can change. I think I probably hit the Java crash. But you can, you know, draw a particularly interesting contour around the thing, and then it'll wrap your text around it and lay it out beautifully, you know, and justify it as well if you want. So there's some pretty cool features there, and they're all just there, and they all, give or take, just work, which is quite nice. So the next thing that people say when they're trying to encourage me is, well, yeah, you can do that, but it can't possibly perform, can it? You know, it's never going to scale, you know? They like to encourage me. And of course, you know, it's going to take some CPU to run a whole lot of LibreOffice things, but that's good. That's good. The more people spending more money running LibreOffice, the better, because then there's a financial incentive for them to help optimize it. You know, so we all get a faster LibreOffice. So that's one, you know, Machiavellian plan to improve the software. But apart from that, we already have users doing this out there. So in Largo, Florida, they're running LibreOffice for hundreds of users concurrently off hardware using RemoteX, which is really a very similar model. So, you know, it's actually relatively easy to do this stuff. And they're serving, you know, a couple of hundred users off one relatively beefy box, you know, 8 CPUs. Well, you know, your laptop has 8 CPUs now. You know, this is becoming a commodity thing, right? And if a rented server in the cloud truly is cheaper than, you know, having lots of fat devices, then, well, it should be cheap, right? It should make real sense. Oh, yeah, and this was a screenshot. Load average of 0.05 for 73 live users in Writer and 10 in, you know, 10 in Calc. Seems reasonable, right? So the code is all there. It's in the box. It actually ships out of the box if you download a, you know, a SUSE or Red Hat or whatever, LibreOffice, and just run it. It should just broadly work. But you need a slightly updated GTK3. Otherwise, that's it. All the code's there. Hacking is much appreciated. There are plenty of silly bugs. You know, it really is quite prototype-ish. And, you know, help is much appreciated there. It really is. And there's lots of other things we can do in terms of being able to embed documents and then script them in fun ways. You know, so tunneling through our UNO scripting interfaces to make that work nicely. And yeah, so that's that. How am I doing for time, Andreas? Am I about to run out? What's the story? Good, 20 minutes. I'm going too fast. The Android prototype is even more prototypey, you'll be pleased to know. Maybe it won't work at all. Let's have a little look. But before we look at that, we need to say that I'm really a fraud. You know, the guy actually doing the work is here. This is Tor Lilkvist, who is cool, as you can see. So he's put hours of toil in here, and there really are hours of toil. It's just a bit of a disaster area. But it's another example of how doing the right thing happens to help you somewhere else. So one problem we have is that the Windows build has traditionally taken hours and hours and hours. Eventually, we fixed this by getting some really big hardware and some fast SSDs and lots of RAM and things, but it still takes 4 hours plus to build a full Windows build, whereas on Linux, you can do it in 25 minutes on a very big machine. So one of the things we wanted to do is do cross-compiling to Windows from Linux, you know, so it's repeatable and clean, and you don't have to install all of these weird prerequisites and click buttons and, all of that Windows stuff. So, and so we're funding some work to try and improve that. But it just so happens that the cross-compilation work we did for Windows is really useful for Android, iOS, and all of these other platforms. And there's really a big learning curve with writing native code for Android, but we're getting there. You know, when you discover that the STL operators don't work in the default libraries and you have to binary patch them in memory, you know, copying bits of ARM assembler over the top so they actually work. And once you get over these kind of obstacles, finally, you can actually run it. And the latest code, actually, this is all lies. The latest code isn't master. It just builds. It'll run on, it'll be in 3.6, I guess. And, we have really lots of unit tests running. The unit tests are one of the things LibreOffice is doing really well. We have hundreds of them. So every time you compile LibreOffice, it imports spreadsheets. It calculates them. It checks the numbers are correct. It does CSV files. Every time you compile, it imports all of the CVEs, all the security bugs that we had in the past, all of the test documents for them, and checks that they're still not causing crashes. Or if they failed, they still fail. And if they passed, they still passed. You know, all this sort of thing happens. And that happens broadly on every compile. We have some slower tests we run as well that you only do for a straight-through compile. But there's really a deep culture of unit testing that we're starting to grow from a zero base. There was simply nothing there in OpenOffice beforehand. And that's great. It actually discovered a whole load of security bugs that are regressed that we had to refix, which is quite embarrassing. But anyway, all of these unit tests now run on Android really nicely. So there's some good stuff there. But it's not very photogenic, you know? I can't really show you a unit test running and expect you to like it. So let me see if I can get my emulator to work. The benefit of black on black is you can't see anything. Anyway, so hopefully you can see something here. So there's some applications here, and there's a LibreOffice viewer test here that we can look at. This is an ARM emulator running on a reasonably fast but not incredibly impressive Core 2. So there we are, 209 meg. Size, you know, really matters, obviously, but not as much as you might think. There are some quite large applications on Android now, you know, like gigabyte downloads for games, which is quite impressive, isn't it? You know, that rich, immersive scenery and the total lack of size optimization. Anyway, we haven't optimized for size much yet, but, you know, it's not impossibly large. And hopefully, if I can move this screen around, we can come to our homepage. Did you notice the 3D effect? It was cool, huh? I need to go up to the top right now, which is a pain. So this is a tablet mode. We think the tablet will be... Did you notice that? Was that 3 or 4 frames? I don't know. Perfect. Did you see that startup performance? No, you didn't. It was cheating. It was running already. So here we have, in the Android emulator, you know, me typing incredible slowness. Which is kind of nice, and you can do, you know, the same things again. This is not a user interface that we would like our users to see. It's horrible, all of this stuff around it, right? You know, the toolbars and the icons, totally inappropriate for a touchscreen device, yeah? On the other hand, look at that. That's kind of nice. How do I get rid of that again? Oh, I do that, right.
I should be able to draw my smiley face. Oh, there we go. It's really good. So he's there. But it shows you that the rendering is broadly working. It's working very slowly because, well, two reasons. One, it's ARM emulation. But the second reason is that we're redrawing the entire screen every time any tiny thing changes. So that doesn't improve things either. But it's basically just a proof of concept demo to persuade you that, in fact, there is something there and it's getting closer. Tor is working on getting the tiled rendering core out of this. So at the moment, all of this is nailed onto the screen by one monolithic application writer. And we need to be ripping out the bit that is inside this frame, you know, that will render just this page so that we can render it to bitmaps and render small pieces and do then write a native JavaScript application with pinch to zoom and, you know, all of that good stuff and throw away everything around the edge here. All of this guy and all of this guy at the bottom needs to go. So it will be gone. And we have a Google Summer of Code student working on that at the moment, which is cool. So it's a prototype. Yeah, no ship date, highly suboptimal. Good, I've said all those things. Good. And yeah, if you want to come and hack on it, if you want to experience the joys of native code development on Android, and it really is quite joyful. I mean, you know, so for example, I mean, I love Android, don't get me wrong, but ADB shell, okay, I need to be somewhere else. Let me go in here. I've been fooling around with... okay, so now I'm inside the Android virtual machine, and so I don't know if you can see, but, you know, you can list all the processes, right? This is a Linux machine. Oh, there aren't any. That's funny. Turns out the PS is some awful thing that doesn't understand anything. Here's another nice optimization. So you can see all the data is in, you know, data like this. And so then you have to type org.libreoffice, and it's been optimized, this shell, for inserting tabs. So when you press tab, you know, you get some tabs. You know, this is some quite quality stuff. But quite apart from that, you can't launch applications yourself because they're all Java. So, you know, Java thing is loaded by some other Java thing that then runs the stuff. So you can't really run it in a debugger. So you have to hope your application doesn't crash early because you'll never have time to attach the debugger in time to catch the crash. So often, you know, you see these sleep 20 calls at the very beginning of the code, you know, which are beautiful, but you can look at standard error if you boot in a certain way with a certain option. You can reboot and things, standard error goes somewhere, and then you can see there's a whole load of, yeah, not very much happening at the moment. Maybe if we do something, we get key events and stuff. So there you are. That's the quick Android refresher. And if you want to come and help improve that world of joy, you're most welcome. Come and see me in the end. So, yeah, it's not the end point. I think I said that. Viewer first. Some limited document editing. I think the UI we have at the moment is actually quite good for in-document editing and touch use. You know, there's this concept, you know, you click into the document and then type there. The cursor concept is actually relatively unchanged in an Android world. Similarly, you know, we can enlarge and improve our sizing controls so they're not these tiny little rectangles. In fact, Tim Hardeck over there with blonde hair has already been improving our sizing controls for the Fat client. And so, you know, hopefully we can extend that to make it more beautiful and more tactile for every application. And yeah, there's lots to be done. And of course, Android is only the first. There's a lot more. There's Tizen and iOS and Windows Phone 7, or is it Windows Phone 8? I don't know. Out there to target as well. But Android is a free software-ish platform, so we'll go there first. So here we go. Here's what I said. Code sharing is nearly the silver bullet. Rewriting a huge Office suite is totally pointless. LibreOffice is getting a lot better. Yeah, we're doing some. It's fun to hack in LibreOffice. You know, you may be wrestling with demons. You know, in terms of other projects, but it's good. You know, it's satisfying when you do it. And almost everything you do has an impact on all of the platforms, whether it's the web, whether it's your tablet, whether it's the Fat client on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Almost everything has an impact on a lot of users, millions of users. So yeah, it's a great place to get involved in free software. I would like to say thank you. I mean, LibreOffice has done amazingly well, not because of anything that we've done, but because of the great support and enthusiasm and encouragement that we have from you guys out there. So thank you for being involved. And we really rely on you guys to help prove the power of free software with us. So get involved, help us out. That's my talk. You've been very patient. Thank you.
Okay, we have quite a bit of time for questions.
Perfect.
Are there any?
You can also throw rotten eggs, if you have any. But that's good. I'll stand away from the laptop.
Any questions?
No questions at all. Come on, wake your neighbor and comments? Ask him what time it is. You know? Go on. The first person to ask a question will get a special prize. There's a microphone here. It's a beautiful one. Tim Yannick, here you go, you see. Once one person asks a question, other people feel they have permission. You know,
obviously I'm asking to get the special prize, but beyond that, how much do you think there is any commercial opportunity there for LibreOffice on Android?
Commercial opportunity?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, in an ideal world, we are all not motivated by money and we do things sheer for passion for free software, right? So, but in the real world, yeah, I think there's some real commercial opportunity for that. Yeah, I mean, so if you look on Android and you look at what they're trying to do, you know, taking the tablet as the new computer, you know, if you read all of the media, you know, no one's going to want a keyboard. Keyboards are so passé. Chairs. I mean, why would anyone want to sit down? So there's all of that hype, but the reality is there's no Office suite that's any good on Android. I mean, there's QuickOffice and all these things, but they're just a bit lame when it comes to editing anything. So to provide the feature weight that we have in that footprint and to make these Android tablets that have keyboards actually useful, because they broadly aren't, I think we could do a lot to drive Android up the form factor thing and make money doing so, and I think it's cool. So, yeah, I would love to create space for companies to do business there. So that's why I'm working on the prototype.
And to make it touchable?
Yeah. And, of course, we're going to need touch. All laptops will have touch in the next couple of years. So, you know, buy screen wipes. You know, invest in screen wipe manufacturers. You know, that's my hot stock tip for today, you know? They're going to be rich. Yeah, so that was a great question. Any other questions? Come on. Ah, good man.
What's the plan with the web interface?
The plan with the web interface? Well, we keep chipping away at it. You know, between talks I do, it gets a bit of hackery, you know, just before the talk to improve it. There are plans to try and find funding to really take that to make it beautiful. And there's really two kinds of people that are interested in that. Are people who have clouds already and want to make them more useful. So, you know, they want an online cloudy editing thing, and they didn't have one. And so that kind of person cares about it. But a lot of the work we do there is also quite interesting to document management systems. You know, people who already have these document management systems and they have loads and loads of documents and they want to show them to you. You know, Google Quick View type thing. And if we take our tiled rendering engine, we could use it for that quite easily. So, you know, again, a high fidelity preview, rendered viewer type thing for your documents. So there's interest from both those sides, really, I think. And, yeah, I mean, my personal feeling here is if I had more time to invest, and currently I'm being tied down by a painful and only marginally necessary relicensing process, but that actually investing here will be helpful and help create a market that will, you know, attract investment and get people involved with it. So I'm excited about it. If you want to get involved, you know, come and see me. There are a lot of easy things to do there and some more difficult things too. So I think it's a useful strategic place to be. Did that answer the question or did it just ramble?
More specifically,
currently it's replicating the desktop interface completely?
Yeah.
Sucks. Excuse me?
That sucks, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely.
So, yeah.
So it needs a, you know, so of course you probably want to start with a viewer and, you know, start with a very minimal cut down JavaScript interface and to do the zooming and panning on the actual client. So currently, you know, you page down in the web interface and it goes to the server, renders the page, brings it back. But the thing is, the server knew what was going to be down there before, way in advance, right? So we need to be ripping this core out, the page rendering core, and having different UIs wrapped around it. I guess a bit like the Gecko model, right? Except we have pages, and web pages are actually only always one page. You know, a strange name for web pages. Anyway, so that needs doing. But that needs doing for Android. It needs doing for the web interface. It really needs doing in our client as well to speed things up. So it's a good thing to do. That was a great question, too. What else did I forget to tell you? Someone else. How are we doing for time?
Further questions?
I need to keep you here until Torsten's talk, because Torsten has a great talk immediately after me on configuration management tools and best approaches. And he's just walked in at the back. Look at him. There you are. Yeah, I know. He's a magnet. So, yeah. Any more? Well, you've been very good. Thank you so much.